Up next, a predator terrorizes a Texas town.
I said, I have family, I have a son. Just please don't rape me.
He started to choke me. I couldn't breathe. I was just gasping for air until he finally stopped.
No one knew what he'd do next.
We had a huge problem that this guy wasn't going to stop.
When police find him, the DNA evidence exonerates him.
He was smart enough to outwit the investigators.
I knew he was just evil. And I never knew that there was evil people on this earth like that.
It was 9 p.m. in Texas City, Texas. And 19-year-old Stevie Green was waiting for a friend to drive her home from work. But the friend never showed up.
I'm in a ticked-off mood because he left me hanging. Christmas was coming around the corner. I've thought about taking a taxi, but then I was like, no, I want to save the money so we can have a better Christmas.
So Stevie decided to walk home, which was about a mile away. Suddenly, she heard someone running up behind her.
The footsteps just stopped. The knife was in my bag. I didn't want to die. I was willing to do anything that this man was going to ask me to do.
He said he'd stab her if she didn't take off her clothes.
As he raped me, I just kept thinking in my head, just saying the Lord's Prayer. The more I said it, the more angry he got.
Afterwards, still holding the knife, he told her to get up.
He told me to turn around and to have my back to him. And when I stood up, something in me just told me to run, and I grabbed my shoe and I booked into the middle of the street, screaming at the top of my lungs.
Stevie was traumatized, in shock, but lucky to be alive.
It was very difficult for Stevie to look at him and get a good description, other than some general build, general height, and things of that nature.
The whole time he kept telling me, don't look at my face, don't look at my face.
Stevie described her assailant as an African-American wearing a hooded sweatshirt that concealed his face, but nothing more.
It was somewhat shocking that it did happen at 9:15 at night, walking home on a street that I've walked, my kids have walked, and I would trust them to this day to walk down that street.
No clues to the rapist's identity were left at the scene. However, a rape test kit produced his DNA profile. Unfortunately, that DNA profile did not match any of the DNA profiles in the statewide database of known criminal offenders. Police checked files for known sexual offenders living near the crime scene. One stood out. Kenneth Ray Johnson had just moved to Texas City after serving 25 years for rape.
He was really a good suspect because he was new to the area. He didn't want to cooperate at first, but then he did. He had several alibis, if I'm not mistaken.
Johnson denied any involvement. Since he was on parole, he was wearing an ankle bracelet that tracked his movement using GPS technology. It showed Johnson was at home at the time of the rape, and his DNA did not match the DNA of the rapist.
He was not in the location on the date where Stevie Green was sexually assaulted.
I never questioned that he would be found. I knew that he was going to pay for what he did one way or another.
But would he be caught before he could strike again? With no one in custody for Stevie Green's rape, investigators feared he would strike again.
As the investigation went into the fifth week and we heard nothing more about any suspects being arrested or charged or identified, it became an idea that maybe this was going to be an unsolved crime.
Then, 5 weeks later, 15-year-old Vanessa Rocha and her 16-year-old boyfriend were in a secluded area of Goddard Park in downtown Texas City.
We went out there on many occasions and never had anything to worry about.
A man walked rapidly toward the young couple.
We looked up and we saw a man standing there with a devil mask on with a gun. He told my boyfriend to turn, not to look at him.
The man held a gun to Vanessa's boyfriend and ordered her to undress.
He was calling me every name in the book, cussing me out, calling me a bitch, you know, a whore, just whatever. I was making him mad because I kept opening my eyes. At one point, he started to choke me. I couldn't breathe. I was just gasping for air until he finally stopped.
After the sexual assault, he told Vanessa's boyfriend to remove all of his clothes.
I was terrified. I really thought he was gonna kill us. I don't even know how to explain it. You can't explain something like that.
He demanded the keys to the couple's car, then made his getaway.
And he told us not to get up until we heard him start the car.
Unfortunately, because of the mask, neither of the teenagers was able to provide a detailed description.
He was covered up from head to toe. What caught my attention was his mask that he was wearing. It was the devil. When we're teenagers, we don't think anything's gonna happen to us until it happens.
The assault was similar to the Stevie Green case, except Vanessa Roach's case was more brazen.
I have never read about or talked to anyone that had worked a case where two people were abducted and totally controlled, stripped down in front of each other, with a girl being sexually assaulted.
Very seldom do you have an attack take place with a witness present. Attackers in most sexual assaults don't want any other witnesses.
A rape test kit collected biological evidence, and the result showed it was the same perpetrator in both cases. The next morning, investigators found the teenager's car just a few blocks from where Vanessa was assaulted.
We realized he didn't keep the car long. And at that point, we really started focusing in that he did live in that area, and that was his area of comfort where he was acting from, to just to give him an easy route to get home, wherever that was.
Unfortunately, police found no foreign fingerprints or other trace evidence inside the car. The very next night, two women were walking home from a nightclub around 2 a.m. when they were approached by a masked man brandishing a pistol.
They were both abducted at gunpoint. He took them to a secluded area behind the school in like a little cul-de-sac. One suspect taking two into control and totally humiliating one in front of the other.
He sexually assaulted one of the women, but not the other.
Again, a brutal sexual assault took place. Very brazen, very cocky in the presence of the witness who was there. Again, a very angry, a very demeaning, a very control freak type of activity that took place.
Both women described a young black male. All they could see was his eyes and mouth. But they noticed something distinctive. The assailant had a gold front tooth. Police finally had something besides his DNA profile that might identify him. In the oil refinery town of Texas City, Texas, three rapes within 5 weeks of each other had some striking similarities. The rapist used masks or clothing to cover his face. It appeared he didn't know any of his victims before he attacked them. His rapes all happened within a radius of 2 miles. And most alarming, the crime showed an unmistakable arrogance.
It indicates a very strong-willed, angry, cocky, arrogant individual who wants to play games with the police, thinks he's better than the system and can beat the system. And it's a game for him.
A DNA test was conducted on rape kits from every similar crime.
I was able to look at these three cases and say, yes, this was the same person that was in the sperm fraction of all these extractions.
Police had a serial rapist on their hands and worried about what he would do next.
We were all concerned about the escalation of these offenses. Oftentimes, a serial rapist will turn into a serial killer or injure their victims much more severely than he was injuring his victims. So we were very concerned about it.
The only clue to the rapist's identity was a description by a witness that he had a gold front tooth. Investigators scoured files for people in the area who fit this description, and one did. Chad Price, a 29-year-old construction worker.
Chad Price was a father, married, seemed to be actively participating with his wife and children in different things in the community. He had developed a reputation in the community of being just that bold, taunting, in-your-face, catch-me-if-you-can type of guy.
Price had never been arrested, but had been a suspect in a series of robberies a year earlier. The robberies were unique because the perpetrator would call reporters to brag about his crimes.
Sometimes he would call and say he was going to rob a building, and sometimes he would call and threaten the lives of the reporters. During one particular attack, actually called the police department and started telling them that he was watching them actually investigate the crime.
The audacity of the robberies mirrored the audacity of the rapes. Police brought Chad in for questioning.
We didn't felt we had enough to get a search warrant for his DNA, for his blood, and that he understood that name. There was nothing concrete to connect him to any of the sexual assaults. And he basically denied everything.
Price also refused to provide his DNA. Detective Getchess wanted to get Price's DNA legally without him knowing it.
I have learned from TV shows like Forensic Files that you can obtain a DNA sample from a Coke can or a cigarette butt, and it's lawfully obtained.
During Chad Price's interrogation, Detective Getchess offered him a can of soda.
We got through with the interview. Chad, he had not finished the Mountain Dew. I had an empty trash liner in the trash can, new, and he was going to throw it out. I said, no, don't spill it. Don't get it all over there. It'll leak out.
Investigators knew they had to drain the soda by making a hole in the bottom of the can.
That's probably the best thing to do, is to go ahead and drain the can so that there's no chance that anything that spills out of that can could possibly affect that DNA that's on the mouth of the can.
Then, DNA testing could begin. The very next day, before the DNA results were in, there was another rape 10 miles away. A 17-year-old girl and her 22-year-old boyfriend were parked at the Dickinson Bayou boat ramp when they encountered trouble.
Two people were present, girlfriend and a boyfriend, and out of nowhere came the assailant, opened the door, produced a gun, had them removed from the pickup truck, and then the terror began.
The man sexually assaulted the girl at gunpoint while her boyfriend stood by helplessly.
He picked the perfect people, just a couple young kids out there making out in a desolate area.
Investigators were convinced this was the work of Chad Price. At the DNA lab, Christy Wimsatt swabbed the opening of the Mountain Dew can with a sterile swab.
I'm looking for a transfer of saliva or skin cells from the mouth onto the opening of the can.
A DNA profile was produced, and it matched the DNA from all of the rape cases.
I called Texas City Police Department to let them know that this was the guy that drank out of this can, was the guy that was committing these rapes in that area.
On September 12, 2000, Chad Price was arrested and charged with the crimes.
They cut a search warrant for a storage shed where Price had items. They found a duffel bag, and in the duffel bag, they found some tremendous evidence that supported all of the other evidence in the case, including the DNA. Everything from ski mask to the Halloween mask of a devil, to a gun.
When I learned that the DNA test came back that it was him, I was excited. I was happy. I couldn't wait to come to court to testify.
Despite the evidence, Price continued to deny any involvement, and he insisted that the DNA test on the soda can was falsified.
He told me that he was not the rapist, that the Mountain Dew can never touched his lips, so therefore the police did not have his DNA, and that he was going to be required to take another blood sample, and that when the results of that blood sample were made available, it would show that his DNA was not at any of the crime scenes.
In a shocking development, Chad Price turned out to be right. When Price was arrested, a sample of his blood was collected and sent to an independent lab for DNA testing. This time, his DNA did not match the biological evidence from the victims.
I was in disbelief. I couldn't believe that we had the wrong person and that all the testing we had done had been wrong. And I wanted to, if it wasn't him, let's get him out of jail, no matter what I thought of him.
But what went wrong? Investigators were determined to find out. A DNA test conducted by Texas law enforcement indicated Chad Price was the serial rapist terrorizing Texas City, Texas. But his defense attorney insisted on an independent DNA test. And when a private lab performed their test, it showed Chad Price wasn't the rapist.
I was mortified. I was immediately short of breath, just trying to remember what I had done in the case, trying to figure out, you know, what did I do, what was switched, what was different.
Prosecutors couldn't believe they had the wrong man. The blood sample for the independent lab had been drawn from Price while he was in custody at the Galveston County Jail. A technician went into the prison, checked his identification, took his blood, then wrote the inmate's name on the vial containing his blood.
When samples are taken, there is a fingerprint that goes with the vial of the sample of blood. The individual who gave this blood obviously put their fingerprint on this vial.
So prison officials compared the print on Chad Price's blood vial to Chad Price's fingerprint.
The expert said, that's not Chad Price's fingerprint on the vial. Great. The next step, whose fingerprint is it?
The unknown print was run through APHIS, or the Automated Fingerprint Identification System, and there was a hit. The print belonged to 36-year-old Derek Perry.
Derek Perry was another inmate being detained or held in the Galveston County Jail on unrelated charges. He was also not a cellmate, but he was in the same pod as Chad Price. And in each pod, there must be 50 or 60 inmates.
Two jailhouse informants told prison officials how Chad Price switched the DNA samples.
They admitted to me that they witnessed and have personal knowledge of the conspiracy between Chad Price and Derek Perry to switch armbands for the blood sample.
Chad Price had a mindset of someone who really believed he was smarter than everyone else. He had a real sense of power. He had a sense that he could control situations. I don't know where that comes from.
The medical staff does not look at faces. They don't know Chad Price from Derek Perry. They call the name Chad Price. Instead of Chad Price standing up and walking forward to give blood, it was Derek Perry who came forward.
Another DNA test confirmed what investigators had long suspected. The DNA from their rape cases was from Chad Price. He was just as brazen in the rapes as he was in his attempt to get away with them.
I think Chad Price believes he can beat anything the system will give him, and that he is smarter than we are, and just anything is the limit for him.
You actually had a criminal who thought he was smart enough to outwit the investigators and play this game with his own DNA.
On May 24th, 2001, a jury took just 2 hours to find Chad Price guilty of aggravated rape, kidnapping, and robbery for the attack on Stevie Green. He was indicted on the other rapes, and the jury was informed of his involvement during the penalty phase. They sentenced Price to life in prison plus 60 years.
He got a life sentence, and I found that to be surprising because I really thought he might get the death penalty.
I was just ecstatic, knowing that he was going to be there just for life. I mean, I can't even explain the way I felt. You know, just, I don't have to see this man. I don't have to worry about this man ever coming for me.
I'd love for him to admit it. That was the only thing out of the whole trial that I think that's why I felt so robbed, was because I wanted him to admit it. I wanted him to say, yes, I did this.
Derek Perry, who was due to be released from prison the day after he switched wristbands with Price, was charged with fabricating evidence and got an additional 5 years in prison. The Galveston County Jail has since changed its procedures for drawing blood. But the lesson for investigators and for Chad Price was that criminals may lie, but forensic technology doesn't.
Without that Mountain Dew can to link him to these sexual assault cases, they might not have ever been able to get a warrant to get the actual known sample to compare to these sexual assault cases. So I would say the DNA was key in this case.
We take a lot of pride in putting a person like Chad Price behind bars. It's nice to get someone who is that arrogant and that cocky and that brazen behind bars as quickly as possible.
Chad Price thinks he can beat whatever the system has to present. Technology is foolproof given the best circumstances. We had those best circumstances.